Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. We are trying to take a sample of what people are thinking and talking about right now at the moment. And the way we like to open up is by asking our guest, what is a myth? What is something that people believe to be true that you know to be false?
I think, and this was coming up in the conversation of the story that I was telling you in class, I think there's a myth when that people who are racist or people from any specific group that you may not agree with that their intentions are bad or that they're coming from a bad place. I try to take a step back on a lot of issues and try to like observe it, you know, from a more disassociative, like less biased, try to be more objective. I think when people are stereotyping other races and stuff, they're not coming necessarily from a bad place, even if the result is bad. They just don't know enough and they just keep strengthening that point of view. And it's to enhance their sense of well-being.
Right.
It's a terrible aftermath, but I don't think they're coming in from, I want to hurt this person or this person is bad. It's just coming in, oh, this is my group, and my group will always reign supreme.
Right, this is my team. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. I'm going to oppose all other teams. And you could root this in football, college basketball.
Right.
Like, you see the same thing.
Yeah.
And it almost
partisan
doesn't.
Politics.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter. Like, you could watch the same trial, whether let's bring up OJ or whatever, and people are going to see the same cues, the same evidence, and will have two dramatically different points of view on it. And that point of view is aligning also with their group that they identify with. We're pro this, or we're pro this, or we're anti that, and we're anti that. Even though the source of information that that two groups are witnessing are the same.
Right.
Yeah. An interesting example of this, there's this article in The Atlantic called The Last Temptation that's by an evangelical Christian about him seeing his, you know, religion basically get tribalized to the point that they now are all fully pro-Trump, even though taking a step back, that seems like the very last thing you would expect evangelical Christians be into. But exactly like you're saying, because they sort of lumped themselves into this group. And also, you know, I would also say to add to that, even though, you know, there are some places where I think most of our listeners would agree, you know, that group is clearly wrong. That group has also faced a lot of just very dismissive, like culturally, you know, shitty treatment from mainstream culture. So every time they're treated like shit or dismissed or called rednecks or whatever, that adds to that sort of division. And I think you're right, like kind of viewing things as, okay, it's our tribe versus theirs. It really does
explain
a lot of it.
Throughout history, it's their tribe versus our tribe.
Right. But it's, you know, the fact it explains some of the things that you would think would be contradictory, like the fact that evangelicals' new, you know, figurehead is Donald Trump.
Yeah. I think when it becomes more severe, and that's when it starts getting into racism and stuff, I think in the future, the same way that Asperger's is a spectrum, I think racism will become a spectrum in the sense that, as far as mental health is concerned, when people have extreme categorizations in their head to the point of absurdity, that's when it's a mental health issue. I'm not saying this is science or anything like that, but when the racism is so strong, it then becomes a mental health issue. It's like their brain cannot stop or know when to stop stereotyping to the point where they're just constantly categorizing, making it black and white, and then just dispelling hatred. That's when it's like, oh, your brain is not operating at a normal level, and you're just categorizing everything.
Right,
to
it's
the
like
point
a,
where
sort
it's
of
like
a runaway train effect.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, oh, no, there's something more there. You just don't know when to stop.
And the reason I asked about the age of the women who you were talking about stereotyping earlier is just I read a statistic over the weekend. I've read a couple statistics lately that made me kind of surprised at how focused the things we talk about when we talk about, you know, Trump supporters being racist and all that stuff, how concentrated those points of view are in like the baby boomer generation and older.
100%. Yeah.
I think it seems like based on some of these reports and statistics that I'll link to in our footnotes, that we have a lot of older people who are, you know, putting this stuff front and center. And then there's like some very visible younger people who go around marching with tiki torches, and we look at them and we're like, well, it must be all ages. And it's actually very concentrated in the elderly.
Yeah. And I think that's an important distinction, because that also goes up with their upbringing and also what they were exposed to when they were younger.
Right. Oh, the baby boomers. They're going to give me shit.
But I love them.
Such a mess. Betsy DeVos,
Betsy,
as we're pronouncing it. She had a hell of a week.
She had a fucked up week.
So last night, she went on 60 Minutes and had some very, I don't know, unimpressive answers to,
to say the least.
About her, like the very core tenets of her tenure as the head of the Department of Education.
You mean just being an evil, out-of-touch person?
Well, yeah, but like, her main thing is this idea that, okay, if you, you know, have these charter schools and, you know, that public schools will be forced to compete with them, and it will bring up the performance of all the schools in, you know, an area.
Yeah, run it like a business.
And she is doing this based on her work in Michigan, where she did this exact thing. And, you know, you would think that she would be able to answer questions about how that went. But Leslie Stahl just kind of threw it out there. You could almost tell that Leslie Stahl, who's the 60 Minutes anchor, who was interviewing her, you could almost tell by her delivery of the question that she didn't think this was a question that was going to make air. She was like, well, you know, like kind of threw it out there offhandedly. I think we have the audio from this part of the interview.
Why take money away from that school that's not working to bring them up to a level where they are, that school is working?
Well, we should be funding and investing in students, not in school buildings, not in institutions, not in systems. And
okay, but what about the kids who are back at the school? It's not working. What about those kids?
Well, in places where there have been, where there is a lot of choice that's been introduced, Florida, for example.
But your argument that if you take funds away, that the schools will get better is not working in Michigan, where you had a huge impact and influence over the direction of the school system here.
I hesitate to talk about all schools in general, because schools are made up of individual students attending them.
The public schools here
are
doing worse than they did.
Michigan schools need to do better. There is no doubt about it.
Have you seen the really bad schools? Maybe try to figure out what they're doing.
I have not intentionally visited schools that are underperforming.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should. Yes.
What the fuck?
Her preparation for, okay, if they ask
the
you about the failed experiment in your core philosophy that you oversaw in Michigan, your response will be what? And her response was either she had no response because she was like, oh shit, they looked that up. Like most
obviously. They know me?
Or her response was, well, I can just say that, you know, schools are made up of students, and when you look at some students, they do well. It's like
wow.
Yo, that's not how data works. That's not how any judgment of performance of any program would ever be judged.
Wait, so what is her overall stance or proposition that we should be taking money away from public schools?
Charter schools are the answer. Run charter schools like businesses. They'll compete with each other, and that will bring up performance. Okay. Is like sort of what this was all about, like what she was pushing for a long time.
But so when Leslie Stahl references taking money away from public schools, that's basically the money that is being spent on public schools currently by like school districts would go to charter schools instead.
Right.
That they would be taking that money away from public schools that are already failing and giving it to charter schools, these new schools. And the idea is that then these charter schools would do better, and just by sheer competition, public schools would feel like they need – would be inspired to
or
do better.
Or just encourage competition among charter schools. Her whole thing is really just – it's not based on anything factual.
Does she want to eliminate public schools?
She wouldn't say that, but that's systematically what she's dismantling the public school system.
So, I mean, basically, there are some great charter schools, but the problem is that you are not guaranteed to have a charter school in your neighborhood. And so they're spreading the funding out. They're taking funding away from public schools, which you are guaranteed to have, and giving it to these other schools. So it's screwing people whose only option is public schools.
My only option in high school was public school.
Yeah. I mean, for most of my life.
Like a small town. Yeah, there was nothing else.
Yeah.
So the whole DeVos, is that her name?
Yeah, DeVos, DeVos, Davos, Seaworth, whatever you want to call it.
So when you guys were saying charter before, I was putting it in the same breath as a private school. It's like this weird in-between.
Yeah, it's in-between.
Interesting.
The two,
okay.
Yeah.
They have like an agreement with like the state to, you know, run as a school underneath. Yeah. Like, the
and some of them have been shown to, you know, work, and there have been some that, you know, create really interesting, amazing people like super producer Anna Hosnier.
Yeah. But, I've heard of her.
But idea is that basically they think something public can't work. And so rather than funding public schools, which, you know, used to be seen as one of the great strengths of America was our public school system, rather than funding public schools and, you know, providing access to education that's equal for everybody, they are, you know, creating this new system that allows them to, like, there's a reason they're doing this instead of funding public
schools. Well, the other reason to the profit aspect is that if you have to build a charter school, that means a real estate developer can build it and get money to build it.
Okay.
And rather than the existing public schools, like, no, just build a new thing, which will cost money, and that money can go to someone in the private sector to build it.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there are many, you know, facets of it that can make it complicated.
Okay.
Yeah. So instead of doing a good job explaining this, she had an interview where she, you know, did a terrible job defending the idea. And presumably because they knew this interview was a huge L that she was going to take, the administration released a plan for school safety basically in the dark of night on a Sunday night. And there was like a media conference call where Betsy DeVos spoke to the media to announce their sort of actions in response to the Florida school shooting. And they're now calling it, rather than being gun focused, it is a school safety initiative.
Uh-huh.
And they will be focusing on repealing Obama era school discipline efforts, because everything done under Obama was evil and probably the cause of school shootings. Looking into the impact of video games on youth violence, which is just a widely discredited theory that makes zero sense.
Very biased.
Every country has video games, and other countries are not having the mass shooting problems that we're having. And also they're looking at the effects of press coverage of mass violence. I mean, we did on this show talk about the fact that the media could maybe stop talking about, like, putting the face and name of mass shooters front and center. So, I mean, it is cool that they're talking about press coverage of mass violence. It's cool to see a presidential administration talk about that. I just feel like they are going to treat that in a very strange way. The Trump administration, their relationship to the media is such that I don't necessarily trust them to be the ones to enforce rules. They just anything to antagonize the media. And I don't think antagonizing the media is the way to go on that one.
Hey, it's everyone but the guns strategy.
Yeah, it's the everyone but the guns strategy. Yeah. I mean, they're also supporting a couple very minor gun changes, basically making gun sellers actually do background checks like the law says they should.
Right.
So there is some gun stuff, but for the most part, it's a response to.
It's just distraction. Even like last week, you know, when we were talking about that Florida bill, like, yes, granted, it's a small step, but really these people, a lot of Republicans will just use that as cover to say, well, we did something. right. and then kick the can yeah. down the road. Like, it's a distraction.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to dip into TV writing since other than Costco, I know very little about most things in life. I find that oftentimes people don't understand that there is a hierarchy in the writer's room because people feel like, oh, like if this, I don't know, it's happened to me where like, I've been like the only person of color on a show or the only woman. And then people will be like, well, why didn't you
yeah,
stop
right.
this joke? Or why isn't the right. show more representative? And it's like, dude, if you are a lower level writer, you have zero power in the room. You have no control. It's not egalitarian.
Right.
Like, and also at the end of the day, the showrunner who is the boss of everything is going to make all the decisions. Like, I think that's the other thing too, is that people don't understand that there is one person who is a writer called the showrunner who literally runs the show, and they are the end all be all of all decisions. Because I've seen people like argue about casting too. They're like, well, that's not the writer's fault. That's like the casting director. And it's like, but who do you think that a casting director answers to?
Right. So I guess for people, cause we're all LA people and yeah. understand the industry, please break down sort of the hierarchy of power, creative decision making on a show. So I think for people to really understand how this all works.
So on a show, there's a first of all, like TV is the writer's medium. Like it's different in film in that, like in film, like the director is kind of the end all be all.
Right.
And
right.
it's their vision. But in TV, it's always the writers. And specifically, there's always one writer called the showrunner who is the boss of every single thing on the show. And they usually are the creator of the show, but not always, because sometimes, you know, like a more inexperienced person might create a show. And the network will be like, well, you've never run a show. You've never really worked on a show right. before. So I'm going to bring in somebody who's more experienced.
That we can trust.
Yes, exactly. Right. But that's who the showrunner is. And it's always a writer. And then on the writing staff, there are two types of writers. There's upper level writers and there's lower level writers. And the simple way of explaining it is that the way they're paid is differently. But it's also like experience and power. So here are the titles. Like, this is what's very confusing for a lot of people when they look at the credits of a show, which is, there's no credit that's just writers.
Right.
Like,
just they written
all
by
have,
one person.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
They all have different titles. And so these are the titles of what writers are. Lower level is staff writer. Staff writer is the lowest possible level writer. That's like entry level. Mm. And then next up is story editor. And then next up from that is executive story editor. And these are lower level writers. They're paid a weekly salary. And then upper level writers are all people who have the word producer in their name. So co-producer, producer, consulting producer, supervising producer, co-executive producer, and then executive producer.
That's the highest level writer besides
yes.
showrunner.
So the showrunner is credited as a executive producer.
Oh, okay.
And, but most, here's what's more confusing is that not all executive producers are writers.
Right.
So like, so there'll be like 10 executive producers, but probably only like one or two of them are actually writers.
Right. Right. Like James L. Brooks for The Simpsons. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And like, and, executive, like the show creator, managers, if they have managers, will be credited as executive producers if they were the ones who kind of like put the whole thing together.
Mm.
So there, and then like executives from like every production company that it went through, like it's a whole thing. Upper level writers are, you know, because you kind of work your way up to that. So they're more experienced. And so generally speaking, at least in a comedy writer's room, most showrunners will look to, everyone's obviously different, but most showrunners will look to the upper level writers to kind of do more of the big picture stuff, like the structure of the story, like the actual story, emotional arcs, seasonal arcs. Whereas like with lower level writers, they generally kind of just want them to pitch jokes and like things, just be joke machines, really. I mean,
right.
everyone's different. There are a lot of showrunners who are more egalitarian. It's like everyone should have a hand in everything. But more often than not, that's kind of the breakdown
right.
of power.
So you, as one person, cannot completely dictate what the show is going to be. If
yeah,
you're not the EP.
Especially if you're at the lower level. At the lower level, you're just like looking for like, when is a conversation you're allowed to join, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Have there been moments where you've tried to bring up a concern in a writer's room?
A million bajillion times.
And then it's just sort of just like, is it more like you're heard or people just kind of go,
It depends. It depends on the people at the top. It depends
right.
on who you're talking to. Because there's some showrunners who are like, look, I'm just trying to keep my fucking head above water here.
right.
Like, I'm trying to deliver a show. Like, and if I don't deliver a show, like, my life is over.
Right.
You know, this is everything to me. I don't have time to like listen to the concern of like, you know, a young writer who's, this is like their first job,
right.
you know?
Right.
But there are other people people who, but there are also other showrunners who are like, yeah, I want to hear it. I want to, you know, especially if they're like a more sensitive or woke-ish, right. like white showrunner, and the person that is bringing up a concern is either a woman or a person of color or LGBT or something like that. Like, they should like want to listen to right. that and be like, how do I not sound like a shitty 80s comic, you know?
Right, right. It's crazy that joke writing is not like a main person thing, because that's something that's like for the staff writers, because that's,
well, no,
like
I mean, obviously
thing.
Everybody does it, but right. like, but generally speaking, they kind of, at least in more traditional rooms, they generally want the lower level people to just be joke machines. Like when the upper level people like get to a point where they're like, okay, we just need like pitches. Like
right,
that's,
right, right.
that's kind
just
of when
get
you're
the conversation.
Yeah. Started. That's kind yeah, of yeah. when you need to shine.
All right. Let us take a quick break and then we'll be right back. And we're back. Let's talk about the firing. Everybody's been talking about. Everybody in America is talking about John McEntee, who is Donald Trump's personal assistant, has been fired. That, among other people,
yeah.
obviously.
For,
we'll get
like,
to the other one.
Very
but...
dubious financial. What,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's
what
really
the fuck
weird.
Is... Yeah.
These reports are just so strange. So first of all, it's just weird that his personal assistant, like the guy who has all the dirt on him, was a... Like, he has a 7 million view trick shot compilation on YouTube where he's, like, throwing footballs into
yeah.
basketball hoops from, like, 40 yards away. Mega. But he – so he was last night escorted out of the White House, and it was such a, you know, serious matter that they wouldn't even let him get his jacket. So it was between 36 and 41 degrees last night in Washington, D.C. They were just not letting him go back to get his jacket. They just kicked him out in his shirt
yeah.
sleeves.
Come on, buddy. Like, get the fuck out.
You're out of here.
Can I get my jacket? Nah, man. We're serious.
It's like they're throwing out a drunk from a bar at like 2 a.m.
But that's kind of what the White House has become.
But what's sure. crazy is we all see this unfold. Stuff like this has been unfolding for the last year and a half. And yet more people continue to want to join this administration, which is so crazy.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of the few places you could be a felon and they'll hire you.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
that's very
you know
true.
I mean? So
obviously with something that serious and apparently according to sources close to the administration, it was related to, quote, serious financial crimes. so obviously he is screwed and won't be able to find a job anytime. Oh, wait. He has already got his next job to be the senior advisor for campaign operations for the Trump campaign for 2020.
Oh, cool.
So they're apparently he knows something because they're trying to keep him as close as possible. They don't want him having another 7 million view YouTube video where he's like, okay, so
check this trick shot
this
out.
This shit was crazy.
For my next trick shot, I'm going to play a voice note I took.
Right.
Boom.
And.
But okay. I guess, yeah, that was a big firing.
That was a big firing. But the other story that everybody's really talking about, Game of Thrones for Dumb People continues. Rex Tillerson is out as the Secretary of State. This was something that had been rumored to be coming down the pike since the fall, that he was going to get fired, because, you know, once he called Trump a moron and then the press was like, did you call Trump a moron? And he was like, we're not talking about this. Like, he just refused
to
say.
Deny, yeah.
He, well, he,
like, he
yeah.
could have lied.
Yeah.
All you guys
no
do
way.
Is lie
yeah.
to the media.
Yeah.
That's all you do. But he was, I think he was sending a
he's
message.
He's an honest man.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, he was
like fuck
no,
this
the guy's a
it.
Fucking
yeah.
idiot.
Yeah.
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 He's like, I'm wrong.
Yeah. You're going to okay. sit here and tell me you haven't called him
yeah.
a fucking moron.
Called him worse.
And yeah, so Trump fired him over Twitter, and, you know, Tillerson's main, like, right-hand guy, told the media that Tillerson found out about his firing on Twitter and,
oh, he did? He
yeah,
really found out on Twitter?
That's what Tillerson's right-hand man said. And then the White House contradicted that and said, no, we told him Friday that he was going to be fired. And so he knew about it because we're a professional organization. Why mm-hmm. would we fire him over Twitter? And then they fired Tillerson's right-hand guy who had contradicted them for telling the truth, apparently.
They're just cleaning house, man, before these very important negotiations.
My favorite part of the firing is that Trump did it and said, he'll probably be much happier now. which is like the sort of thing that you would write like that a passive aggressive, like wounded lover would say about someone. Like, I bet you're real happy now. Does she go down on you in a theater?
Oh, hell yeah, Alanis.
Yeah. Anyways, he continually undermined Tillerson. I'm sure he is much happier now. Everybody who has any history in diplomacy was like, yo, this guy should quit. Like, especially when he was negotiating with North Korea and Trump came out on Twitter and was like, don't waste your time, Rex. These guys, like, don't.
Right. He's like, no, I think dialogue is the best route.
Right.
Well, because so now that means that Mike Pompeo, who is the head of the CIA, is now next in line, or that's who is going to be the next Secretary of State.
Right.
So we'll see how that goes, because they differ a lot on certain policy issues.
He's pretty hawkish, right?
Yeah, and, like, he's down to pull out of the Iran deal. Uh-oh. Because, like, as we were saying before, that's the only thing keeping them from having nuclear weapons.
Right.
But just Trump just wants to make good on his campaign pledge because it's just a bad deal.
Right.
But, okay, sure.
Well, it was done by Obama.
So. Yeah, so it's everything is bad. Obama bad. Right. Everything good. And, like, Rex Tillerson wanted to stay in the Paris Climate Agreement. Mike Pompeo doesn't really care. He's kind of like a climate change denier, I think.
He's openly a climate change denier.
In his confirmation hearing, he was like, didn't really want to talk about science at all.
Right.
So in that way, I guess Trump has found a buddy that will just kind of go along with whatever he says.
Right. And also Tillerson came out in the aftermath of the announcement that North Korea and Trump would be meeting and was like, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit here, guys. Like, we're not going to just, like, throw Trump in there, like, in a meeting. And Trump apparently didn't like that. And he's been sort of against Tillerson getting any credit for North Korea from the start, since he, like, released that statement being like, don't waste your time, Rex. And apparently, according to inside sources, Trump decided to replace Tillerson now to have a new team in place before upcoming talks with Kim Jong-un. So it was explicitly like the North Korea thing.
Jesus. I mean, Mike Pompeo. Dennis Rodman better be part of that delegation.
Oh, for sure he will be.
Just to make – I feel like that would be the only safety mechanism we have at this point. Sadly, is,
you know,
it Dennis
Rodman?
Baller?
What? Is if he came with Pippen.
Oh,
because his whole obsession is the 96 Bulls.
Yeah.
If he just showed up.
He's like, hey, my man, it's Steve Kerr, Tony Kukoc. I even got Luke Longley.
Right. Not Jordan, though. Obviously.
Not Jordan, yeah, because Jordan's an asshole and probably wants to watch the world burn. So,
right.
But then that means then there's an opening at the CIA, which means the deputy director, Gina Haspel, is who Trump wants to be the new head of the CIA, and she'll be the first woman to run the spy group.
A victory for all of womankind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's got a little bit of a past.
What's that now?
Like most CIA people do. I think she was one of the – she ran the first black site, like, torture facility in Thailand.
Yeah.
And was also – you know, she's one of the top people running the torture program, along with the al-Qaeda suspect Abu Zubaydah, who they waterboarded 83 times in a single month and, like, slammed him into walls, put him in a coffin.
Her parents must be so proud.
Right.
They're bragging to other parents that they know.
At one point, they thought they killed him from all the torture. He did.
Right.
And then they found out he didn't have any useful information to provide. So
right.
He went through all that shit just for that. And also ordered, like, the destruction of videotapes of those torture sessions.
She's the one who destroyed the videotapes.
Yeah.
Too.
I know Dianne Feinstein blocked her once, too, when she was going to get a promotion. Again, a lot of intelligence people was like, look, you're not going to be able to be a top CIA person and not have your fucking hands all over the dirtiest shit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't know if that's, like, a good enough reason, because a lot of people will say, like, you know, she was basically carrying out a program that the president, the White House, and other top people had signed off on, and she was just following orders. But we'll see, because she'll still have to get confirmed. And if, like, you know, John McCain is not a fan of torture, so he might not be a vote that would confirm her. Rand Paul, I think, voted against Pompeo. She might not be immediately seated.
John McCain's not a fan of torture?
No.
Huh.
Apparently,
Weird.
He went through something.
He had a bad experience with that? So do we have any reason to believe that Pompeo will be, like, somebody who actually staffs the diplomatic positions? Because, I mean, that's the thing, that Tillerson's tenure has been marked by, you know, just not hiring any of the positions in the State Department.
We'll see. I mean, he's systematically gutted the State Department. So I don't know what Mike Pompeo's vision is for the State Department.
Right. He didn't like gut the CIA when he took over.
No, I mean, so. He was just, yeah, you can't. You right. know what I mean? Like, you got to right. keep that agency running, baby.
Right, right. Yesterday, there was a special election in a heavily dark red district. At least it was the last presidential election, right?
Yeah.
Trump won by 20 percentage points.
So red that Democrats didn't even run a candidate for like two congressional cycles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're like, fuck it, bro. Like, we don't need to bother.
But this year, they ran Connor Lamb,
mm-hmm.
and he is a former Marine, and I guess he's somewhat conservative in his stance on like guns and stuff. But it doesn't matter. He's a Democrat in a district where, you know, the guy who he was running against, Saccone, is like just straight up. He claimed one of his sound bites was, "I was Trump before Trump was Trump." Like he was
cool.
just yeah. He
ignorant.
Was, no, yeah, just like, you know, whatever you guys liked about Trump, that's me,
man.
Was
that,
man. So let's just, let's see how you feel about Trump now.
I was eating stuffed crust pizza before Trump.
Less than 2 years after
you. I was taping my tie before Trump.
voted for him in record numbers. How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, look, the demographics of that district are really what's crazy. It's a 93% white working class. Mm. And like you said, I think Trump won by 20 points or something. So the fact that this Democrat eked out a victory means a lot of Republicans were like, oh, I'm willing to vote for this Democrat. Mm-hmm. And that should alarm the GOP. And most conservative, like think tanks and special interest groups, because I think outside groups spent something like $13 million on this race because they just, you know, they knew this was such an important race because it's a deep red district. And Connor Lamb, yeah. Like, he obviously wasn't super progressive because you have to kind of take into account what
right.
the district is like. But either way, like, he still campaigned on, like, universal health care, like, expanded background checks for guns. He's pro-choice. He supports medical marijuana. You know, all the things conservatives do.
Right.
Because you cut to today, and after this, like, really embarrassing defeat happened, everyone and their mother on the GOP is like, well, you know, he ran, like, as a conservative. So
right.
that's why he won.
Right.
And
right.
they're trying, the mitigating has begun.
Yeah. So, you know, Fox News last night, I switched over to them as, you know, CNN still hasn't called this as we're recording this. We're recording this on, you know, Wednesday morning.
Right.
CNN still hasn't called it. New York Times still hasn't called it. But, the latest is that Lamb leads by 627 votes after all the absentee votes have been counted. So,
yeah.
He leads by 627 votes with all the votes counted, so barring any sort of recount.
I'm no Stephen Hawking, but I think that means he has more votes than one.
Right.
But I don't know. There could be some kind
of
vortex.
Well, no, for some reason, nobody's calling it, even though everybody seems to be implying that he won.
I wonder if because they think it might be a lawsuit situation or something.
Right, yeah.
Like with Al Gore and Bush.
Yeah,
so close.
It could be.
But I don't know.
Especially because this is so embarrassing for Republicans that they... And there were weird things with, like, different counties holding back their votes last night. Like, and people were like, this is really irregular and the sort of thing that would cause a lot of red flags to go up if, you know, you're basically holding the votes back until you need those votes to see how all the other votes are counted.
Right.
Which is kind of a shady thing. And these were in heavily red districts. So people were maybe thinking that something was going on there. But as of right now, it looks like all of the absentee votes have been counted and the Democrats are still leading by 627 votes. So I flipped from CNN over to Fox News, and it was being downplayed like a motherfucker.
Couldn't believe it.
Wow.
The best was Fox and Friends this morning.
What were they doing?
Because you know that's Daddy's favorite show.
Right.
And so already the rumors were that, like, if Connor Lamb won, like, heads were going to roll.
Right.
Because, like, again, Trump picked a fucking loser.
Right.
And, you know, clearly that fucking rousing rally that he gave over the weekend where he called Chuck Todd. Yes, Chuck Todd calling him a son of a bitch and, you know, mocking Maxine Waters and all this other shit.
Mocking anyway. The idea of him being presidential.
Yeah, exactly. Where he was like, oh, I love the troops. Like, he literally said a line like that. It's like, yo, what the fuck are you saying? That is a sentiment you should hold sincerely as president. Anyway, so... That didn't work because this guy, Saccone, he ran on that, like, liberals hate God kind of message and, you know, they hate our way of living. Cut to today. So on Fox and Friends, they're like, yeah, he basically ran as a Republican. You know, he supported the Republican tax plan. He did not.
He did not.
That's I mean, that's just a complete – that's completely falsified. He said he supported the president's, like, immigration policies. He did not. He was, right. like supporting Dreamers and undocumented
and
people.
And Saccone ran on the tax cut and stuff
yeah,
like
exactly.
that.
Yeah, exactly. And no one gave a shit because there's a lot of polling to suggest a lot of people who are not wealthy do not give a fuck about the tax cuts because it does not affect them.
I'm telling you guys, people aren't stupid. Like, you can pretend like they are, but they know.
People started
smart.
They're
going to figure this shit out.
And then the last thing was like, oh, you know, he stood with the Republicans on abortion. And, right. you know, because he's a Catholic. He's basically a conservative. He said, yes, I am Catholic and I'm opposed to abortion, but I believe that a
right.
woman has a right
yeah.
to choose what they want to do.
Right.
So they sort of took that and
as a candidate, he's not going to impose his religious beliefs on the people that he's.
What a novel idea.
Yeah. yeah. Also, he's 33.
Yeah.
So he's a former Marine and now, wow. I need
easy
to get
on
my,
the eyes, I
would
say.
I need to get my life together.
Yeah, seriously. You got to stop hitting up those Marvel characters on Twitter DMs.
And shut
and
down by Luke Cage.
Look, I need a superhero and not a regular man.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this dude might be as close as they come because former Marine who just knocked off.
I know. Is he single? That's going to be my next Google search history.
Go ahead.
I would guess not.
That's the favorite of Democrats right now to run in conservative districts is get a veteran in there.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
It's much easier for people to kind of trust. They're like, okay, you may be
a guy who knows how to handle a gun.
Right.
And I mean, there's and nothing wrong with.
And also,
you know, that I say that is something.
That's smart. I mean, if that's what you need to do to bridge the gap and make people understand that you can also have the shared common ground or shared like core values and also be like, yo, you might also fuck.
I think the thing that
shit.
We saw the most this past year, at least that I saw the most, was especially on social media and like Twitter, was the assumption that all veterans are Republican.
Right.
Like, that is a big thing. I think him
yeah.
being a former Marine is
you don't,
probably
you don't have to be a Republican to love your country. And I mean,
and to fight and serve for your
right,
country.
Right. To like that is an incredible like sacrifice that people. You know, give to fight for their country and sacrifice themselves. And yeah.
Well,
so
yeah, but conservatives
it's not
sort
all
of,
Republicans.
Yeah, they
Republicans
weaponized that ever. During all the Iraq war shit, too, because they want to be like, oh, you're against this, like, illegal war, but you know, you don't support the troops. It's like, no, come on, that's not what we're talking about. But I guess the other thing to talk about with this, too, is the district, the reason it was vacated is because the former congressman who had it, he is like an anti, you know, abortion guy and was like leaning on his mistress to have an abortion. And then that got out.
As they do.
And so that's why.
As they do.
That's why the seat opened up. But the other thing to talk about, too, is that this district is not going to exist next year.
Right.
Because of like the.
That was what Tucker Carlson was saying last night. He was like, and just so we're clear, this isn't going to exist pretty soon, right?
Yeah, but either way, the fact remains, even if Connor Lamb, they find that he loses, the fact that he even pushed it to the line.
And I mean, the thing Tucker Carlson was saying to try and undercut the seriousness of this devastating loss for the Republicans was that when this is a district that's not even going to exist here in like 11 months. So, but super producer Nick Stumpf was pointing out that this is a district that isn't going to exist because they are redrawing it because it was so unfairly mm-hmm. slanted to the Republicans. The Republicans
right.
drew it up themselves to have an unfair advantage. And so they weren't even able to win this district that they drew up like to cheat, essentially.
Yeah. They had the Game Genie invincibility code on and they still died in the game.
Right. I mean,
deep cut video game.
You guys should just. Yeah, I don't know. I'll post a picture of Tucker Carlson's face on Twitter so you can see what, like, you can tell that he realizes deep down, like, his insides are digesting themselves because he knows what's really going down. He's just, he just isn't willing to say it out loud.
And I will post a picture of the Game Genie by Galoob.
Oh, crap. This Connor Lamb kid is not kid, Mr. 33. He's cute.
Ooh, you better. Okay. I think I might see somebody sign in the DMs. But
hey, we can talk about healthcare.
But this district, it, you know, they could. It won't exist because of all the redistricting, because the Pennsylvania Supreme Court found that, like, the gerrymandering heavily favored Republicans. So now they broke it up into new districts. So. He's going to if he wants to stay in office, he's going to have to run in a different district come November. Like, both of these guys potentially could be in Congress by 2019 if they run in different districts again. But
right.
he will hold this seat at least for this session of Congress.
Right.
So, but yeah, to go along with the whole like, oh, he won because he's a conservative. So the people who are really scared are obviously congressional Republicans.
Right.
So today, Paul Ryan really tried to fucking do a little spin job. To try and frame Connor Lamb as a Republican.
I don't know that there's a big surprise. I think the candidate that's going to win this race is the candidate that ran as a pro-life, pro-gun, anti-Nancy Pelosi conservative. That's the candidate that's going to win this race. So this is something that you're not going to see repeated because they didn't have a primary. They were able to pick a candidate who could run as a conservative, who ran against the minority leader, who ran on a conservative agenda.
Yeah, a conservative agenda of universal health care, background checks, medical marijuana,
and pro-choice.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm a Republican.
Yeah. So, I mean, Paul Ryan is just it's hard for him to get his mind around the fact that his main, you know, the way he defines being a conservative and a Republican inside his mind is we give as much money as we possibly can to rich people. Like we just give all the taxes and we get rid of all the entitlements for people who need help. And there are just no, you know, safety nets in America. That is what being a conservative means. And the fact that people would be disagreeing with that and I still don't understand where he thinks the numbers are coming from, like why he thinks anybody would think that's a good idea other than him and the billionaires who he works for. But yeah, he's never going to get his mind around that idea.
Sweet, sweet justice would be the House flipping in November and Paul Ryan losing his gavel and we get to see him. Man, if he got even voted out of office, that would be amazing. But I would love to see him lose his speakership.
Well, because I mean, when you look at like how different counties voted, his county wasn't like plus 20 Trump. It wasn't that high. I think it was plus 11 Trump. Yeah. So, you know, when people are seeing a plus 20 Trump county flip, then it seems like anything can happen. Anybody can go down in this next election.
Which is why I think they're panicking. And even Brian Kilmeade on Fox and Friends, his tweet was, "Democrat Connor Lamb's great showing in red district shows Dems the way to November success. Support Republican issues."
Right.
What the fuck are they? What are they telling? Like, I don't understand how a Republican would read this and be like, "Oh yeah, okay, so the Democrats are Republicans now." Yeah.
Panicking is uncomfortable. It causes your, you know, heart rate to shoot through the roof, and
like daylight
savings. Yeah, I think they have to justify it in some way.
Right, and nobody likes to panic, and you know, the Democrats were the victim of a little bit of, you know, gaslighting themselves in the last 2016 presidential election. And now it's the Republicans' turn to tell themselves that everything's all right.
Right.
It's all going to be okay.
Hey, man, it was Russia. That's what they start saying about Connor.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. And we want to talk about UFOs because, you know, we talked a few months ago about the fact that the New York Times was just like, oh, yeah, UFOs are a thing, by the way. We haven't been talking about this because we thought we'd sound crazy. But now we have this dude who used to work at the Pentagon who just left his job and was like, yeah, so my job was to monitor UFOs and they weren't taking me seriously enough. So I've left my job. I'm starting this thing with the dude from Blink 182, which makes it sound weird,
it makes total sense.
He's just a really smart guy who has always been about this. And he's like, yeah, no, they're UFOs. So, in case you thought that they had just been explained away, the Washington Post just had an article that came out that was like, the military keeps encountering UFOs. Why doesn't the Pentagon care? And they pointed out that, you know, I think this was an op-ed. It was by a, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence for the Clinton and George W. Bush administrations. And they were like, you know, they have insight into how the Pentagon operates. And the point they were making, which I thought was really smart, is, okay, so let's say they're not aliens. If this is Russia or China, they have technology that is like decades ahead of ours. We need to figure this out.
Yeah, that's what's crazy, because obviously Sputnik was enough for us to be like, okay, fuck that. We're going to own space.
Right.
And that created something. But now it's like, it's weird to think that if this is actual technology that another nation is wielding, like, wow, we are really fucking behind.
Yeah. And this was accompanied by another video of a tic-tac-shaped thing, like the New York Times article. It's a tic-tac-shaped object that is moving and flying in seemingly impossible ways, and you can hear the, like, naval aviators like on the thing being like, holy shit, yeah, what the fuck is that? And they, you know, because nothing is supposed to be able to move.
They sounded
in the
a
way
little
that
bit
that
too
thing.
Excited for
yeah.
me.
Yeah. No, they were fucking psyched, which well, I would be too.
And another reason why this guy had came out with this piece is because he was saying he meets with a lot of people in the military who see this and like they just get kind of like, yeah, 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 we hear you, we hear you, we hear you. And nothing's really happening. And that is a little concerning because they've gutted, like apparently they've really have no budget dedicated to this, unless it's so secret that they just don't want to talk about it. But
right.
I mean, I feel like this is something we need to seriously discuss.
Have you seen the Monsters Are Due on Maple Street episode of The Twilight Zone? Always have to reference Twilight
I have not.
Zone. Okay. Well, it was essentially that aliens don't actually have to do anything, that we will just destroy ourselves. So that's what I would like to think. Why doesn't the Pentagon care? Because there's so much going on
right
here that we're like already killing ourselves here. So like the aliens don't even have to. This is like a bigger
picture. To come fuck us
up. Yeah, they don't even have to come and fuck us up. Also, did you see that somebody made the Golden Girls theme song over the X-Files opening?
No.
Did you see that?
No.
Oh man, it's so good.
We're gonna have to post that.
Wait, they like
so
layered
they took
the vocals?
They took the Golden Girls theme song and put it to the X-Files
damn
opening, and it actually works.
Wow.
That okay. sounds amazing.
No, but that is my like, I don't know. Yeah, I agree that obviously we should be focused on this, but what you're saying makes more sense as far as it being another country here as opposed to actual aliens.
Right.
Right.
What I'm saying is if it is actual aliens, I would love the fact that they're just sitting back and watching us destroy ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. And they don't have to do anything.
Right.
I think when Jaquise was here, when this story first came out, we were saying like, I think they probably just come watch our planet like it's reality TV.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah,
we're Kardashians.
Here, this motherfucker. Yeah. Yeah.
Holy
yeah.
shit. This guy is the leader of that, that mound of earth.
Yeah.
Oh, the other thing they're saying is like there's just kind of like a real stigma of being like the quote unquote alien guy in the national security
yeah.
bureaucracy. Like no one really wants to be caping for aliens. But like what the fuck? Like if you're looking at this like really this irrefutable evidence, whatever it is, there has to be some kind of legitimate interest put into this. And you can't just be labeled like a heretic or something because you're concerned.
Yeah, but there's such a negative connotation with believing in aliens. I mean,
right.
when you look back in history of people that said they got abducted.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, their anal probing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Those people are normally seen as being crazy.
So Kanye is in the news for a couple reasons. First of all, I guess he's been holed up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Yeah.
Which is like this, you know, very gorgeous, like lush nature town. With
Ski
like
town,
crazy,
baby, yeah.
Crazy views of, with you know...
Is it
mountains
Tetons?
And
Could
yeah,
you
the
Tetons?
Tetons.
Yeah,
and you know he's there for recovery purposes, but all of a sudden all these artists started visiting him, and people...
we don't know if they're visiting him, but a lot of people were posting pics in Jackson Hole, and we can only assume.
Right, Travis Scott, The Dream, King Louis, Kanye's cousin, who's featured on a bunch of his albums, Tony Williams, all suddenly are. In Jackson Hole, Wyoming,
yeah.
which is not normally like known for its diversity.
Not, yeah, that's not the
yeah.
Miami
right.
for like what Miami is for hip hop. Like people are like, yeah, right. I'm about to go to Jackson Hole, my guy.
Right.
Make a lot of white people uncomfortable.
Right.
But no, I mean, because when he was doing My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, he did the same thing in Hawaii, right?
Right.
Like he made that whole album in Hawaii and basically mm-hmm. had everyone come to him to
right.
do this. So. I mean, look, it follows a pattern. He was there, like, I think last year, but they say, like, there's reporting now that he's there again. And, yeah, when you couple that with this, I just don't – I'm curious to know what this album sounds like because clearly Pablo was made while he
right.
was in the midst of, like,
right.
free-falling mentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was in a manic period. He was – I think
Yeezus
he had been –
too was kind of like that, too. Also.
Yeah.
The way he came out
yeah.
doing press for Yeezus was also kind of like, ooh.
Yeah.
So what is he – is he actually in recovery right now for – Is that a cover?
I think they've kept it kind of vague.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe there was some drug stuff. There was also some bipolar stuff, and he, like, went off his meds and then maybe got into
oh, okay.
some substances. But yeah,
but
it's
I think,
been
yeah.
it's been vague like that. Like, ESPN's John Skipper's latest interview, if anybody's seen that, he's, like, talks all around, like, what actually happened. It's very, very weird. Mm. But That's also a substance abuse thing. But anyway, so the other reason that we've been talking about Kanye at the office is because somebody released a Kanye Madness bracket. You know, as the March Madness brackets came out on Sunday, somebody put out a bracket of Kanye's, what they deemed to be Kanye's 64 best songs pitted against one another. They have it color-coded by album, which is really useful. And, you know, I appreciate them for doing this because it's a great presentation. It's a lot of fun, the conversations we've been having. I just think they're way off base with their taste. But, I mean, that's going to happen. That's just going to happen with, you know, something as subjective as music, but in particular Kanye's music, because there are so many people who are like, I only liked Kanye's first two albums, and
that's
then,
me.
Everything like sucks mm-hmm. after that. I personally have really enjoyed his more recent stuff a lot, and I think the person who created this bracket might be more in line with you, Miles.
Might be me. Yeah, the one seeds: Jesus Walks, oh, right. College Dropout, Touch the Sky, mm-hmm. All Falls Down, and Can't Tell Me Nothing is only one that isn't off the first two.
Which is off the third.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
Very early.
It's all like early.
But then the twos,
up,
you know, the like, twos are also, yeah, I mean, it's, look, all I'm going to say is Last Call wins over everything for me. Personally, I just love, I have an emotional attachment to Last Call. I can't objectively say it's the best Kanye song, but
I think
emotionally
it's
my favorite.
I think it's the most Kanye song. It is the most Kanye song because
right,
it
yeah.
is him just talking
about himself
over a beat
for 8 minutes
being,
yeah.
And it's like putting, yeah, yeah. It's just his sort of tireless fascination with himself and like with telling his own story. And it's just such a great beat. It, yeah.
It is weird looking at it, like it takes you down memory lane, like how much Kanye has changed. You know, he's like, his music changes so much. It's really hard to.
Yeah.
I like all of his. I like everything he's done, but yeah, it's tough to like looking at All Falls Down. I was like, God, that's a totally different
yeah.
person.
Yeah,
my 50 seconds of fame and come back next year with the whole fucking game. I mean, woo. Because you know why? He's still hungry. This is still humble Kanye,
yeah.
like as if there were such a thing. I mean, obviously
I miss the old Kanye.
Yeah. But like he's still obviously gassed up on his own accomplishments, but he's still talking like he really has a point to prove. Now Kanye is in the, I've proved everything, fuck you, I'm God. Which
right. yeah.
that version resonates less with me than someone who's confident in himself and still
yeah.
has a humility to know that he has things to achieve or
right.
is not perfect.
But talking about the subjectivity and this person hating certain Kanye projects, like Yeezus, which is one of my favorite Kanye albums, the seeding is – they only have four songs from it. And Bound 2 is a 10 seed. Black Skinheads is a 13. New Slaves is an 11. And Blood on the Leaves is a 13. So like – which all
Blood
seem like – all seem like classic songs, and they're all treated like underdogs.
What's your – wait, you said Yeezus is one of your favorites?
Yeah.
Or is it your favorite? Or Twisted Fantasy is yours?
Probably Twisted Fantasy, but it's up there.
What about you, Lamar?
Late Registration is
yeah,
probably
yeah.
my favorite, yeah. Crack Music – Crack Music
is number six seed.
Yeah, I love the production on Late Registration.
Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I think John Bryan –
yeah.
Came
yeah.
on that to help basically
yeah.
be like, let me show you how like someone like really produces an album or executive produces an album.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can really feel that touch on like, cause it was almost the refined version of College Dropout with,
right.
with John Bryan
mm-hmm.
on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Touch the Sky is a one seed. Heard Him Say as a six seed. I really love that song. That
Ultra
song
Light Beams
up.
As 12 is a little bit, I feel
right.
like it could be higher.
Yeah. No. So,
yeah,
and then Pablo,
dope.
Which I also love, they, Real Friends is a 13 seed. Famous is a 14 seed.
Real Friends is a great song, by the way. I love that song. And I think to go back to your point of people, of like him sort of like not being hungry anymore,
mm-hmm.
it feels like what he's trying to do, if I could try to get in his head a little bit, he's sort of like using himself as an experiment, like with his fame.
Right.
And like, because his music is sort of starting to mirror his what he's becoming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, it's hard to relate to, but it's also like interesting to watch him become that person. but also rap about that.
Yeah, because on Real Friends, he's talking about real, like, he's being very introspective. He's like, man, like, I can already tell people just hit me up for shit that I want. I hit people up for shit just when I need something.
Yeah.
You know, I've been potentially extorted by a cousin.
Right, right.
Like, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I think I really liked Life of Pablo as one of his later albums. There was like a humanity, or not that it, like, there's a lack of humanity, but it felt a little more real, or that he was like vulnerable.
Yeah, right. I mean, we've all been there when we're having sex with a porn star and she's just bleached her asshole and that gets on your t-shirt.
That
happened to me last night.
Does that make me an asshole?
Yeah. No, don't be too hard on yourself.
Should we just fuck right here in the middle of this Vogue party? Shut down the whole party? Would everybody start fucking?
Would everybody start fucking? If that's not a direct quote from me, I mean, I don't know what it is.
What if we fuck here right in the middle of this dinner table? Like, that's a real freestyle because he's just like free associating at that point. He's like, yep.
This is real life.
We should talk about this living Portlandia sketch that happened.
In Oregon.
Oregon, Portland. So a man, Alex Lovell, nearly lost his fingers, his life, and he appears to have lost the woman he loved. I'm just reading directly this article because it's just too fucking crazy to summarize. Otherwise, the Camus man is feeling pretty good. Quote, I was just so proud for beating this samurai wannabe crazy lady with hate in her heart, Level 29 told the Oregonian in a Facebook message exchange Wednesday. I've been preparing my whole life for something like this.
Now, Jack, what is something like this? Without, because that was a good lead up, but what are we talking about?
So his girlfriend, Emily Javier, 30, attacked and repeatedly slashed him with a samurai sword in his sleep.
Jesus.
That is such a very specific thing for him to have been preparing his whole life for.
I've been preparing to fight an angry girlfriend armed with a samurai sword.
Immediately roused from sleep and beat off my girlfriend who was attacking me with a samurai sword. And then it goes into his video game playing habits.
Well, because this is why, right?
Right. Lovell admits he may spend a bit too much time in front of a computer screen, but he insists he never cheated. She apparently thought he was cheating and said she found some hair in the drain of their shower. I don't know how the video games come into it.
Well, he was saying he spends like 12 to 13 hours a day.
Too much, my man.
Yeah, he's not paying attention
training
to his,
for a player unknown's his girl, battleground.
His girl's over here training for with a samurai sword.
Well, that's what's crazy. So because of that, he's like, well, how could I be cheating? I'm fucking literally playing this video game all day. Yeah. Like, I can barely see you, let alone another woman. But she found, like, I guess a dating app. But he's like, I don't use that shit. Okay, well, I don't know. You know, whatever.
Right.
E-athletes or e-athletes can also be players, too.
Yeah, he said, I wasn't a sweaty nerd. More of a e-athlete.
Ethlete. Yeah. That's cool. Dope. But the thing was, look, do your thing, man. Like, you're going to play 12 to 13 hours. I mean, if your girlfriend's not down with that, you probably shouldn't be dating anyway. But, like, what's crazy is that she had basically, like, prepared for this because they said when they talk about the night when she attacked him, he came home late, ignored her, and she went to the couple's bedroom where she had taped the samurai sword and two knives to her side of the bed. So, a little premeditated.
Yeah.
Like the end of Die Hard shit where she has it like taped
up.
I think everybody in that house is playing too much video games because she's like, I'm going to shinobi this motherfucker with a samurai sword. I have like fucking, you know, taped to my side of the bed. But anyway, he woke up to her, attacking him. And he was saying, he's like, I was able to Wing Chun my way to survival. He said he drew on a lifetime of kung fu films and martial arts training.
Jesus.
Bro, you almost died.
Right. It's really weird. It's like he has this whole, like, internet vibe to him, like, that he just, can't break out of.
Maybe he didn't change. I don't know. Like, who would sleep with this guy?
Right.
He looks dope. He looks like Shia LaBeouf and Post Malone mixed together.
Oh, yeah.
He's, like, smiling in his wheelchair, like, bandaged up. I mean, he could be so jokey internet that he doesn't even know how to properly make sense of an attempt on his own life without being like, bruh.
Wing Chun my way out of that one.
What do you mean? You almost lost all your fingers. Yeah, but
oh, man.
Fucking owned it. So.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.